Hey everyone, Graham Talks Pats back here. Patriots are 7-2. It seems that's kind of crazy. It seems kind of hard to believe, honestly, given how the season started. The win streak continued this week against Atlanta. Definitely one of their more difficult games over the last couple weeks, but nonetheless, I mean, you got to be really, really pleased with the results. You know, Atlanta isn't like a spectacular team, but they're a talented team. Michael Penix, Drake London, Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts were all very recently top eight picks. So you definitely, there's a lot to be said for beating a team that offensively it has a lot of talent, even though, or at least maybe not players who have shined in the NFL so much. Through Pitts has been a little bit underwhelming, but Drake London and Bijan are bona fide stars. London showed it on Sunday. We'll get into that in a little bit, but you know, Penix obviously is still working through, you know, becoming the player I think he'll eventually be, which will be a pretty solid quarterback. But I think as a whole, you got to look at it and say, hey, like, you know, the Patriots beat a team that's super volatile, that beat the Bills, who's also a team the Patriots beat, but that's, you know, nothing to be, you know, nothing to scoff at. The Bills are still a very talented team, and in my eyes, still one of the two or three teams that I think are really, really legit Super Bowl contenders. So yeah, I think it's hard to scoff at anything like that. We'll get into the next week. This game the Patriots have coming up against Tampa in a little bit. We'll talk about the trade deadline a little bit, moves I wish the Patriots had made, just my general feelings on that. But we'll start with just the game against Atlanta, diving into it a little bit deeper. Michael Penix's stat line looked pretty solid. 22 of 37, 221, three touchdowns. I don't think that's super representative of how Penix played. I don't think Penix was bad. I don't think Penix was that good either. I think he relied a lot on Drake London and a lot of kind of on the defense of Atlanta too. So I don't think Penix didn't wow me. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't something I found like overly impressive either, to be completely honest with you. The run defense though for New England continued to be really, really good. Bijan Robinson, 12 for 46, 3.8 a carry. Tyler Algier had just two carries for 6 yards. That's a guy we'll get into in a little bit. I kind of wish the Patriots had tried to swing a trade for him. Obviously he didn't get traded anyway, so it doesn't matter a ton, but, that's kind of an interesting piece, his lack of use over the past couple games. Only 10 carries over his last three games, so that is something interesting to watch in Atlanta. But Bijan's a heck of a player, without a doubt. So to bottle him up to 3.8 a carry, keep him under 50 yards, the Patriots to this day have not allowed a 50-yard rusher in 2025, which is a testament to how good their run defense has been. Aside from that stat, just in terms of rush yards allowed per game, the Patriots are number one. So they've had a really, really impressive season as a unit. I think a big piece of that has been, really underrated piece of that has been Kyrus Tonga. They signed him to basically a nothing deal just to be a backup defensive interior guy. And he's honestly, it's hard to take him off the field. It offers a lot in terms of being able to allow Milton Williams and Christian Barmore to truly go after the passer and not have to sit back and defend the run so much. He's been such a great anchor for them. So he's been a super, super impressive player. Yeah, huge shout out to the defensive line and to defense as a whole. Robert Spillane, too, is getting in there. He's played well, especially over the last couple of weeks. So it's been really impressive to see what they've had going on. As far as receiving for Atlanta, I actually don't think the Patriots' corners were bad at all, but Drake London still went 9 for 118 and 3 touchdowns. That holds him to 13 a catch, which isn't great, but when you work in the fact that two of those catches were on 5'8 Marcus Jones and Drake London's 6'5, 6'6, and it was kind of these switch plays at the goal line, these switch releases where there's not a whole lot Marcus Jones or anyone can do about it other than just playing zone, you know, it's that's where two of his touchdowns came from, one of which came from a strip sack on Drake May, which we'll get into a second when we talk about the Patriots offense a little bit more in depth. But yeah, I mean, Drake London's a monster. His catch at the end against Carlton Davis was ridiculous. Kyle Pitts had 4 for 38, and Bijan was the second leading receiver. Only two receivers had catches for Atlanta. Drake London, 9 for 118 and 3 touchdowns. Darnell Mooney, 1 catch for 15 yards. David Sills had targets, didn't have any catches. And then it was just Bijan with 8 grabs for 50 yards. So he was their super short yardage guy. Atlanta's stat sheet, with the exception of Drake London, isn't impressive. So, and this is the only the third time all year they put up more than 22 points. Yeah, I think this is a case study in why it's so important to not turn the ball over, because the Patriots lost the turnover battle. And they lost the turnover battle 2-0. And they still came out on top because Atlanta's has not been a super productive team this year. But it's proves this is a case study. Like I was just saying, it's you know, you can't turn the ball over, and the Patriots have done a really good job at avoiding that over the past couple weeks, through this win streak. But, you know, Drake May turning the ball over on an interception, and that key fumble at the end of the half, which, like I said, we'll talk about in a second in a little bit more depth, was pretty disappointing. I don't know. I don't think Atlanta's a particularly, productive team. I think they've shown that. They had the 28th ranked offense coming in. David Sills is their wide receiver 3. I'm not enamored with Atlanta. Thankfully, Parker Romo, former Patriot, the gift that keeps on giving, huh? With that mixed extra point at the end there, and the Patriots sealing the victory with a little pass to Hunter Henry and him getting the first down. So that was good to see. That's been good. Moving on to the Patriots offense a little bit, Drake May, 19 of 29, 259 yards, 2 touchdowns and a pick. Here's my thing, right? I think we've gotten so accustomed to May playing such excellent football over the past couple weeks that when he looks human like he did against Atlanta, it almost looks like, man, this guy's totally lost it. Now, I'm not saying that by any means. Drake May still played a fine game. His first half in particular was very good, with the exception of the last 30 seconds or so when he had that bad fumble. I think it was against the number one pass defense in football, against A.J. Terrell, against Jesse Bates, against 2 first-round rookies in Jalen Walker and James Pierce in that front 7. So I don't think it's an easy team to play against, as the Patriots offense in this situation. So, I think the 3-5 record of Atlanta isn't super indicative of what they could be. And I don't know if it's really – I haven't watched Atlanta enough to say, it's a Raheem Morris thing, it's an offense thing, it's an offensive play calling thing, but their defense is a good defense. And they've got the talent offensively to be a lot better than 3-5. So it'll be interesting to see what the rest of the year holds for Atlanta. But Drake May had another 8 carries for 20 yards on the ground. Pretty conservative scrambling day against a good defense, but it's hard to be too mad about what he put together on the ground. Through the air, it's – the frustrating thing for me is, look, I understand end of the half, they had no timeouts. You're trying to make a play, and he's done that a lot this year. It's looked great, and he looks like Patrick Mahomes. He looks like Josh Allen. He looks like the best of the best when he makes these incredible plays. But I think one thing that we're kind of neglecting with May is that the fact that he's, he's human. He can make mistakes, and, I think that fumble was kind of on him. Yeah, Mike Onwenu kind of got turned around. I think it was by Jalen Walker, if I'm not one of those first-round rookies, if I'm not mistaken, to get stripped. But May's got to just get rid of the ball. He's got to throw it away. He's got to, tuck that ball away and go down. And I understand, once again, they had no timeouts. That's probably the end of the half. But getting to the end of the half is a lot better than a fumble. And it's definitely a lot better than James Pierce scooping the ball up or turning it inside the 5 and then Drake London scoring, potentially a 14-point swing. So, that's been something I think that's been, something to look out for. Definitely disappointing at the end of the half to go in like that, to go out like that. I think kind of sucks. You're up 21-7, and you have the opportunity to make it 24-7, 28-7. Even if you just go into the half 21-7, you got to feel pretty good about that instead. It's 21-14 going into the half. They did get the ball to start the second half, so I guess that was a little bit of a redeeming factor, but even so, I think it's just kind of disappointing. Rushing-wise, we talked about Drake May with his 8 for 20. Travion Henderson, 14 for 55. Terrell Jennings, 11 for 35 and a touchdown, his first of his NFL career. D'Ernest Johnson, who was elevated from the practice squad, has had some NFL success, did not get a carry. A little bit surprised about that. I would have figured, I know he's new to the team and everything, but I would have figured that, you toss him 2, 3, 4 carries, but Jennings was running the ball pretty effectively. The stat sheet won't really show that at 3.2 yards a carry, but I think the bulk of when he you know, was used was in those short yardage situations. It's on a third and one. It's on a, you know, down by the goal line. It's in these situations where the goal isn't necessarily to get a ton of yardage, but just to get the job done. And I think he did a really good job at that. A couple of weeks ago against Tennessee, Mike Vrabel was yelling in the tunnel how the Patriots had found their 5-minute back, and I think they've definitely found something in their third back in Terrell Jennings. I like him a lot. He had an awesome play right after the touchdown on special teams, runs down and makes a tackle on the kickoff return, on the ensuing kickoff return. So really liked what I saw from Terrell Jennings throughout the game. Trevion Henderson's stats look a little bit underwhelming. And at first, to be honest with you, I was like, there's no way that's real, right? 14 for 55, 3.9 a carry, that's not encouraging. But I looked at it a little bit more in depth. He had one carry, it was a little pitch to the left side in the fourth quarter, I believe, where he lost 8 yards. If you were to take that away, he would have gone 13 for 63, which bumps him up all the way to 4.8 a carry. If you said a guy was going 13 for 63, 4.8 a carry, you'd feel very good about the performance. Take away that one play, I think you overall feel really good about what Trevion Henderson put together. Had another 4 catches for 32 yards through the air. So that would have, in theory, if you take away that play, put him at, you know, 95 total yards for the game off 17 total touches. So, yeah, I think Henderson showed some decent ability. We'll have to see what the deal is going to be with Ramondre coming off that injury. I'm actually not sure what his status is at the moment. I'd be curious to see what his deal is right now. I'd imagine he'll be playing against the Buccaneers this weekend. He's currently still questionable. So we'll see. I think, honestly, even if Henderson's or even if Ramondre's out, he's averaging 3.4 for the year. I don't think you feel terrible about Jennings and Henderson being your two lead guys in the backfield. It does say, as of 2 hours ago, Stevenson, because of his toe injury, won't practice on Wednesday, Evan Lazar of the Patriots official site reports. So generally speaking, when you don't practice on Wednesday, that doesn't tend to be a good sign for game day. It isn't a great sign. And Kayshon Booty also didn't practice Wednesday. So that makes me think neither of those guys are going to be playing. But yeah, we'll see. Christian Ellis also not playing on Wednesday. Christian Gonzalez, I think is all good. He was questionable to return. But I think he should be all good for the game. We'll get into that in a little bit. We'll dive in a little bit more on that. But as a whole, I think you got to feel okay about the running game. I think in an ideal world, you'd have a guy who's a little bit more of a productive back. It would have been really cool if they had found a way to add a back through the trade deadline. I know Jamal Williams is still available as a free agent. As far as when I last checked, I can confirm that right now. But I think just in general, yeah, he's still available. He's 30 years old now. I just think you got to look at it and say, hey, you know, we've got a guy in Jennings who's a little bit of a younger option. He's a nice short yardage guy. Trevion Henderson was our second-round pick. Let's put some faith in those guys. I would still have liked a veteran. I would have liked a Tyler Algier because I don't think you have a true lead back because I don't think Ramondre Stevenson's that guy. Even when he's not putting the ball on the ground, it's, you know, not inspiring yards per carry. I would have liked to see them add a different guy, to be completely honest with you. Receivers, Kayshon Booty going out early and probably missing next week is really tough. That does kind of take away that main deep threat. Booty's an interesting player. He isn't a guy that where his deep threat ability is really quantifiable through speed necessarily. It's more so through I have elite ball tracking and I do have pretty good speed. I've more than capable speed, but he's a little bit Cordell Patterson in that he can, once he gets going, he can move, and he's a bigger guy too. So I really like what Kayshon Booty offers. Obviously missed him this past week with that hamstring injury. Pop Douglas led the team in receiving for 100 and a touchdown, obviously playing with some off-the-field issues going on. I think it was his uncle who passed away the night before, so obviously him dealing with a lot of emotions and still coming out with a game like that is super impressive. His first 100-yard game of his career. Nice touchdown on the opening offensive Patriots drive. So obviously really nice to see that from Pop Douglas. Hunter Henry catching the ball that ended the game, that got the first down to end the game. other than that, still though, like just a very sure-handed, reliable tight end, and exactly what you want to see. Stephon Diggs not putting on a crazy performance in terms of yards, 3 for 38. Did have the touchdown in there though, so you know, that first half explosion of 21 points that, you know, was then subsequently slowed by Atlanta in the second half, and the Patriots put up just 3, was, you know, generated by Pop Douglas, by Diggs. Yeah. Austin Hooper, another catch in there for 20 yards. Terrell Jennings had 1 catch for 9. Matt Collins, 2 for 9. Definitely a fall off from his time against the Browns, where he had, you know, career high or season high 87 yards. Could be his career high, too. It's a very, very real possibility. So, yeah, Kyle Williams, once again, going catchless, 2 for 20 yards in the air. He, to me, at this point, you got to, like, almost redshirt him, just treat this like a redshirt year. He just hasn't looked particularly good, to be honest with you. I think him and May just look really out of sync. I'm not sure what it is specifically, but, yeah. That I thought was a little bit disappointing. We talked about Tonga earlier, too. I thought it was an interesting wrinkle to have him in the backfield as a fullback on that first drive on a 3rd and short. And I would like to see a little bit more of that. I think, like, when you're in those 3rd and short, 4th and short situations, I think it's the same deal with, like, the tush-push with what Philly does. It's like, all right, if you're really that good of a running team, just run up the middle. You can put as many big guys out there. You can put the Tongas. You can put an extra offensive lineman in, whatever. Like, they won't be able to stop you. Right? Like, there, you have to go 1 yard. You've got a guy in Terrell Jennings back there who's 220 pounds running full speed ahead right at you. Like, if you're a linebacker, you don't want to get in the way of that. You don't want to get in the way of that. And even if you do get in the way of that, like, what are the odds you actually stop it? So, I think just as a whole, I really like, you know, putting the big guys back there and having them go right up the middle as your lead blocker. Yeah, I mean, other than that defensively, we talked about the corners briefly, too. I thought Marcus Jones had kind of a tough game as far as covering a guy, you know, who's 8 inches taller than him went. But I don't think he had a poor game in general. I thought he had some really, really nice plays getting into the backfield and tackling Bijan Robinson. I think that's where you're looking for your slot corner to come up big. And I think when you have, like, just a matchup problem where it's like, hey, like, they're going to switch Drake London onto Marcus Jones at the last second. There's not a ton you can do about that. Carlton Davis, I actually thought, had one of his better games of the year. It wasn't perfect, of course, you know. Allowed the touchdown to Marcus to Drake London at the end there. But had a nice play, I thought, right before that when he... You know, he had a near interception against that Jalen Hawkins kind of knocked out of his hands. I think the target there was Darnell Mooney, I want to say. It could have been Drake London, though. Nice play from him, though. Almost ended the game before Drake London could have even gotten to the end zone on that 4th down. So nice play from Davis there. I thought, you know, seeing him continue to improve is definitely something that you want to keep seeing. Kalavon Chase on with the sole sack for the Patriots of the day. Even though the Patriots only had 1 sack, you also have to give Milton Williams some credit. He got in the backfield there, caused an intentional grounding on Penix that backed him up 15 yards and led to that loss of down and eventually the punt that led to the Patriots being able to ice the game with that Hunter Henry catch. So that was definitely nice to see. Joshua Farmer got in there on some pressures a little bit more, which was nice to see. I didn't think Christian Ellis was particularly good, once again. But, yeah, I think, yeah, it wasn't an overly inspiring performance. But as a whole, I will say for the Patriots, I think this is a game where you kind of had to – it was hopefully a little bit of a wake-up call. Because on one hand, you're playing a team that doesn't have great stats offensively that you should be able to beat. But, yeah, I think at the same time, you've kind of put yourself in a spot – in that game where you're like, all right, like, we messed up through the interception. We messed up via the fumble that almost led to a touchdown itself, but then led to a touchdown in the ensuing play. So, yeah, I think it's just one of those where it's hopefully a little bit of a wake-up call for them. They scraped by because of a Parker Romo missed field goal, but it's unbelievable to me that Atlanta was even in the game at that point anyway. So, yeah, I think I think as a whole, it's definitely something that
you want to keep working on.
But, yeah. Yeah, I think it's definitely important to, you know, treat this game as a little bit of a wake-up call, and hopefully hopefully they don't have as many close calls. Will Campbell, by the way, shout out to him for tackling James Pierce, chasing down a super, super fast edge rusher in James Pierce out of Tennessee, who looked like he was going to take that ball in the end zone himself at the end of the first half, but great tackle from Will Campbell, great hustle play. We'll move on a little bit to the trade talks. Patriots didn't end up making any deadline day moves, which I don't mind, to be honest with you. I think when you look at the guys that got moved, those show you the guys. I think everyone who got moved, and then also Breece Hall, I think those were all the guys that were kind of proved they could have been had, right? I don't think, like, if you're mad about them not trading for Olave, right? Olave didn't get dealt. So I'm not entirely sure he could have been traded anyway. Traded for anyway, rather. So, yeah, I kind of feel like it's hard to be mad about them not trading for some top-flight receiver, because I don't know if those top-flight receivers were actually available. So, yeah, I think Rashid Shaheed could have been an interesting move. The Seahawks dealt a fourth and a fifth for him. That's a little bit steep for half a season of Rashid Shaheed to me. I think if you're the Seahawks and you need a true deep threat, that's a good move. I think the Patriots have that in Booty, even though he's going to be out probably for this week. He should probably be back against the Jets. Worst case scenario, he misses 2 weeks. If that's really the case, then I probably wouldn't make a move for Booty. I don't think that makes a ton of sense. Shaheed, rather. I wouldn't make a move for him because I think he's redundant to Booty. I'd also say, as far as receivers go, a fourth and a sixth for Myers, like, that would have been... That's a move that I wish they'd made, to be honest with you. I think that would be... That's the sort of guy that I think would have offered a lot to you. And maybe he wouldn't have wanted to come back to New England. I don't know why he wouldn't want to come back, because he had so much success under Josh McDaniels in New England originally, then when he went to the Raiders. Had some success last year, obviously. Had 1,000 yards for the first time. So I'd be curious to see what the deal was there, why the Patriots weren't willing to move a fourth and a sixth for Myers. He would have been a guy I would have loved to have added. Maybe a little bit redundant to Diggs, and that, you know, primarily slot guys who could move to the outside. That's a little bit disappointing that we're unable to add him. The only other guy that I'm a little bit disappointed they didn't make a move for was Logan Wilson. The Cowboys dealt a seventh for him. I'm not a big Christian Ellis guy at all. I don't think Christian Ellis is good in coverage. I don't think he's a particularly impressive run defender. And for a guy like Logan Wilson, where you could potentially make a move for him and then have him and Spillane in there as your duo of linebackers, I like that a lot more than having Christian Ellis. And you probably could have included Ellis in a deal with Cincinnati if you wanted to do that. You might have even just been able to swap them, you know? I don't think Logan Wilson's having his best year, but I think last year he was a top five graded PFF run defender. He had a 90-plus grade, according to PFF, in run defense. So he's the sort of guy that you look at and you say, hey, if we have him and Spillane, like, just the rich are getting richer via Logan Wilson coming to the Patriots. I think that would have been a really, really nice move. I would have loved to have seen him and Spillane team up together for a run defense that's already been spectacular. I think that's the main other guy I would have liked to have seen them add. Joe Tryon, I think that could have been an interesting one if you were really trying to add an edge rusher. He went to the Bears. As a former first round pick, I think the only other guy who didn't get dealt that I think you probably could have had would have been Arden Key. I was never, like, a huge advocate for bringing Arden Key into New England. I don't think he's a bad player, but I think it doesn't move the needle enough for me. I'd rather just keep a sixth-round pick at that point. We talked about it a little bit last week. I really like the moves they made with getting rid of that Kyle Duggar contract and then getting rid of Keon White. Not getting rid of Keon White. I think you could have kept him, but I think he probably wanted out at this point. And, for a guy, Keon White, who was a healthy scratch against Cleveland, and a guy like Kyle Duggar, who was a backup safety and wasn't performing well at all, I don't think either of them are guys you look at and say, you know, finding replacements for them as far as depth goes is, like, unrealistic, you know? I think Del Pettis stepped in. Del Pettis had a nice play against Atlanta. Like, I don't think he – I think he steps in. You don't really miss a beat compared to Duggar. Keon White, you had Corey Durden, you had Kyrus Tonga, you've had Josh Farmer. I don't know, all of them don't play the same role that White did, where he was kind of like a hybrid edge defensive tackle guy. And I know, like, Josh Farmer isn't playing that role, but Corey Durden's done a really good job in limited snaps this season. I don't see any reason, you know, for a guy who's going to be your last, you know, hybrid defensive lineman edge rusher. You give that role to Durden, you give that role to Ponder, you give that role to Anthony Jennings, Caleb Murphy, who they just signed. Like, you can give that role to any of those guys, and I don't think you miss a beat. And you know, just in general, I think as a whole, it's hard to be too frustrated with them not making a move, just because I don't think there was anyone that was moved that you're like, man, we really missed out. And I think the only two guys who are stars were both traded by the Jets, in Sauce Gardner and Quentin Williams. They were not gonna — that those weren't moves that were gonna be made in division. I think the Patriots and Bills are gonna be very happy, given that the Dolphins continue to be a pretty dismal team, and the Jets are trading away any semblance of a good squad that they had. Now, given they didn't have much of a semblance of a good squad anyway, they're 1-7 for a reason. I don't think the Jets are a very impressive team, and, you know, I think it's the right move for them. I think it's a good move to stockpile picks and let this new regime, this new Aaron Glenn-led regime, you know, reset the clock a little bit on some of these guys, because I don't think, like, I think re-signing Sauce Gardner was a good idea. I think re-signing Garrett Wilson was a good idea, but I don't think that they're gonna put you anywhere. And they now have 5 first-round picks over the next 2 years and got a second from the Cowboys. Like, I think the Cowboys first even next year could potentially be really good. I think you've got the opportunity to add some guys. I think it was the Packers first rounder that they got, rather. We also have the Colts first rounder. They have the opportunity to jumpstart a rebuild and make something of that squad. So it'll be a really interesting time seeing how the Jets adapt with their new coaching staff and play style, and see how that goes. It'll be really interesting. Obviously, stocking up on those picks with no more Sauce and Quentin Williams. Breece Hall could have been dealt. That was the other piece. I don't think it would have been dealt in division, but if you had given up a third rounder, the Chiefs were offering a fourth, and the Jets held firm at a third rounder. If you had given up a third rounder, would the Jets have said no? I think if another team had come calling for a third, I think if another team, if a second team came calling for the third, if the, you know, the Rams had wanted a deal, or the Cardinals, I think, is probably a more realistic option, had wanted Breece for a third, and the Patriots also wanted Breece for a third, I think you probably take the Cardinals' offer. A, because the Cardinals would have a better pick, but B, just because you're not trading them in division, you're trading them out of a conference. But I think if you're New England, it's kind of tough to sit there and be like, all right, like, you know, it's hard to be too, you know, vexed that they didn't make a move for Breece Hall, because it's not really a guarantee to me that Breece Hall even would have been available. So moving on to this upcoming week, it'll be an interesting game. I think the Patriots are 2.5-point underdogs right now. We'll have to see exactly what this season week brings for injuries for each team. I'm not actually sure what Tampa's current injury situation is with Bucky Irving or Chris Godwin. Those are the two guys that, you know, were two of the bigger names that were on the injury report. Mike Evans is obviously out. Interesting. So Bucky Irving is not expected to participate in Wednesday's practice, Rick Stroud of Tampa Bay Times reports. And Chris Godwin, he's also not expected to participate in practice. So that's a couple guys on either team now. Luke Haggard was their starting right guard, their backup to Cody Mock, a former first rounder. He's just still questionable. Doesn't give any other information on him. I do think it's interesting, though. We've got you know, a running back and a wide receiver here in Bucky Irving and Chris Godwin. We've got a running back and a wide receiver in New England in Ramondre Stevenson and Kayshon Boutte, who missing out on each of those guys for both teams is big. I do think that missing out on Bucky Irving and Chris Godwin is bigger for the Bucks than it is than missing out on Boutte and Ramondre is for the Patriots. I think, you know, Rashad White and Sean Tucker are good. I don't think either of them are at Bucky's level. And I think Chris Godwin, obviously, Ibuka is an excellent player. But I think, you know, Chris Godwin is still a very, very good option. I think also you get a little bit redundant if you're Tampa Bay with Emeka Ibuka, Tez Johnson, and Sterling Shepard all being kind of smaller options size-wise, who like to be in the slot a little bit more. Ibuka can play on the outside too, but I think he's best working out of that slot. Godwin offers you a guy who also was early in his career a little bit more of a slot guy, but is a little bit bigger. So he can get on the outside. He can run deep routes a little bit at a higher level. Tez Johnson, of course, is a deep threat too, but you know, not physically as imposing. So yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how they go about you know, defending the Buccaneers wide receiver core, particularly if Chris Godwin is out and Bucky Irving is out. I think you're going to have to rely a lot less on Spillane and Ellis covering the running backs out of the backfield should Bucky be out. I also think if you can find ways to cover, you know, or if Chris Godwin is really to be out and Mike Evans is already out, Jalen McMillan is already out, if you have Christian Gonzalez on Ibuka, then you have the luxury of just saying, hey, follow Ibuka around. We've got Carlton Davis, too, with Tez Johnson and Marcus Jones lined up more than likely. And then Carlton Davis using his veteran savvy, hopefully, to be able to defend Sterling Shepard, who people laugh at Sterling Shepard being a legit option. But I think he's better than people think at this point in his career. How old is he now? He's coming off that ACL injury a couple of years back. When he was on the Giants, 27 for 275 and a touchdown. It's not like stats that'll wow you, but he's a nice option. Against the Jets earlier this year at 80 yards, and his last couple had just 8 against the Saints, but no one put up crazy numbers against the Saints for the Bucs. The week before, though, 7 catches on 7 targets, given 25 yards. I mean, 3.6 a catch, 3.6 a carry is bad, and then 3.6 a catch is unreal. His longest catch in that game was 11 yards. So, which means he had, what, 6 catches for 14 yards? Is that possible? It's unbelievable. I think you are definitely hoping Chris Godwin's in there if you're Tampa, but it would make New England's life a lot easier if they can just have, no Chris Godwin to deal with. Kate Otten would be the other guy in there. He'd likely be defended by some combination of Charles Woods, who's kind of elevated himself into that corner 4 role over Alex Austin. And then he'd also probably be covered by the safeties in Craig Woods and Jalen Hawkins. So maybe some Del Pettis in there too. It seems they like him as an additional defensive back with Kyle Duggar gone and Alex Austin kind of moving down the depth chart. Those are the big names on the injury report right now. Christian Ellis, we mentioned briefly, also didn't participate in practice. That would probably just mean Jack Gibbons becomes the starting linebacker next to Spillane. It looks like Jelani Tavai they like using in sort of this like auxiliary linebacker role where you're not a linebacker, but you're not an edge rusher. And he is a little bit slow, so I don't know if you want him and Spillane together, which ironically, if you were to have traded for Logan Wilson, it wouldn't have given you a whole lot of speed at linebacker, given Spillane's a thumper, but he's not moving side to side with crazy pace. So it seems like it would probably be Jack Gibbons primarily as that guy, and then Marty Mapu and Jelani Tavai rotating in. So that'll be interesting to see. I think that would probably be what you end up seeing defensively. We kind of talked about the defensive backfield, how that would work. I'd like to see a little bit more, production from the edge rushers. We didn't see much last game. Harold Landry's obviously still having a very good season. Gailevon Chason having a career year. He's going to be a guy who gets paid in the offseason, whether by the Patriots or someone else. I do kind of want to see Caleb Murphy play. You know, we talked about him a little bit. He's a, you know, he was a guy who dominated at Ferris State. Won the award for the best defensive lineman in college football. Aiden Hutchinson won that award. Jadeveon Clowney, Whitney Mercilus, Chase Young, all these guys who are, you know, former first-round picks, second-round picks. Great college players. So really, really impressive to for a D2 guy at Ferris State to win that. And it's the sort of guy that he had a sack earlier this year against the Giants. Like, I think he's the sort of guy that that you'd like to see, you know, get an opportunity, especially in the absence of Keon White now. You know, obviously last game not having a ton of edge production in general. I think the other options at edge between Anthony Jennings, I think they've moved Jelani Tavai out to the edge a little bit. They're more in run support. Elijah Ponder, he's an undrafted rookie. He hasn't shown anything. The only time he really played an extended amount of time was against Miami, and I don't think he looked that good. So, yeah, I mean, I think I would like to see Caleb Murphy play a little bit. Corey Durden has gotten some opportunities, too, as sort of that, like, hybrid edge defensive lineman sort of guy. So I think that's been interesting for sure, too. As far as, like, keys to the game go, here's the thing that's kind of interesting to me is, you know, Tampa defensively is, like, a pretty middling team. They're not a bad team by any means, right? Yaya Diaby's leading the team in sacks. You got Vita Vea, on that defensive line. Logan Hall, former second-round pick, also on that defensive line. Levante David in there. Hassan Reddick is questionable right now. Does it look like he's going to play? No data other than just he's questionable for the moment. And then in the defensive backfield, you've got Jamel Dean and Zion McCollum being your outside guys. Tyke Smith in there, the rookie, leads the team in tackles. Antoine Winfield, obviously a really good player in his own right. So even Kendall Vildor, who spent some time with Detroit in the past. I want to say he went somewhere else between Detroit and Tampa. I'm curious now. No, he didn't. He just went straight from Detroit to Tampa. He was actually a guy I really liked out of college. Went to Georgia Southern. He's a good punt returner there, too. Benjamin Morrison, I have no idea how he's played. He was a second-round pick, had some issues with injury. I think he'd come off a torn ACL, maybe. Some knee injury, if I'm not mistaken. Has two passes defended this year as a depth corner for them behind Jamel Dean and McCollum and Vildor. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a good group. I don't think it's, you know, a group I look at and say, you know, this is some star-studded bunch, but I think it's a very solid, decent squad. Chris Braswell in there, a former Bama guy too. Greg Gaines, a good veteran option at a defensive tackle. But, you know, they're a good team. I think they're going to be, you know, a really solid playoff team come the postseason. They're 6-2. They're first in the NFC South for a reason. But I think if they really are missing Bucky and Chris Godwin, which a lot of times the Wednesday injury report, if they don't play on Wednesday, it's kind of difficult to say they'll play come the weekend, especially if they don't play Thursday. If they don't play tomorrow, that'll be something to look out for. Because then it really is a, you know, unless it's a game time decision, they've said that already, the chances just go down even further that they're going to end up playing. So I don't have a ton of – this would not be a game I'd put money on. But you look at this game and you say, you know, Baker over the last couple of weeks hasn't been particularly impressive, even though he is playing at like an MVP caliber level, 15-24 for 152 yards, no touchdowns, no picks against New Orleans. The week before that, they put up 9 points. He went 28-50, so almost a 50% completion percentage, 56%, 228 yards, touchdown and a pick, was sacked 4 times, been sacked 7 times in the last 2 games. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been, like, ridiculously impressive over the past two. And even when they beat San Francisco, he went 17-23, 256 for 2 touchdowns. That's a much more impressive stat line. You know, obviously, the win against Seattle, almost 400 yards, 2 touchdowns. You know, he looked great in that one. So I think, you know, as a whole, you have to look at it and say, you know, we've got a guy who's really, you know, a spectacular quarterback in Baker Mayfield, but I don't think it's a guy that you look at and you say, you know, this guy's unbeatable. I think he's playing at an incredible level right now. He has 13, you know, touchdowns to two interceptions. He's been a great quarterback this season. But, like, I mean, for how well the Patriots' run defense is playing against, especially against a team that could potentially not have Bucky Irving, and then you say Christian Gonzalez is likely going to play, and you're going to be missing out on Mike Evans, Jalen McMillan, and Chris Godwin potentially. Like, I don't think you feel terrible about your odds. I do think the Patriots will upset him here, upset in quotes, because I don't know how much of an upset I'd really call it. But I think that given that they're underdogs right now and all the betting spreads and all that, I would probably put them ahead of Tampa right now. My score prediction for this weekend's going to be a New England win. It's not going to be a convincing one. I'm going to say it's going to be 27. I think I originally said 27-24. We're going to bump that down for Tampa, though. I'm going to say I don't think I realized how many people are out. I'm going to say it's going to be 27-17 if Bucky and Godwin don't play. In the event that one or both of them plays, I'll still give the edge to the Patriots. I'm going to say it'll be 27-24. Little bit tighter, but I still think, you know, I think a lot of times when a guy doesn't practice on Wednesday, it just doesn't, you know, it's not a lot of hope for them playing on Friday, or playing on Sunday, rather. So this will be a really interesting game. One thing that I've started to do recently, be sure to follow my Twitter, Graham Wilker 1, GRAHAMWILKER 1, as in the number 1. There I'm going to be, you know, I just tweet about the Patriots, et cetera. I guess post now because it's X, but tweet about the Patriots, you know, little thoughts, stuff like that. I'll plug my articles in there. So, you know, you guys will be able to stay up to date on that. That'll be cool. The only other thing was, as far as the Twitter stuff pertains, I was looking to do a mailbag at some point, and I thought that could be kind of interesting. I'll probably just, because I don't have the following yet, I'll probably just comment under a Patriots post or something, you know, hey, you know, what are your thoughts on the Pats right now, questions you got, whatever. I thought that could be interesting to run through at some point, especially now that the trade deadline's over. There's not as much of a middle ground to fill the air between talking about the past week and the week before, or the upcoming week. So, it'll be really interesting. Obviously, the Jets, storylines of the week, the Jets shipping a lot of people out, Patriots not making any moves at the trade deadline. A huge game this weekend against the Bucs. That'll be a real measuring stick for them. Try to continue this winning streak, especially being underdogs for the first time in a little while. Still up 7-2, or still up 7-2 to 6-2 over the Bills with that game in hand, and then also beating the Bills earlier in the season. So they have a reasonably firm grip on the division for now. It would be nice to see the Bills add another tick to the loss column, though. It's been fun talking. It's been good. Hopefully the Pats can extend their winning streak and extend their no 50-yard rusher streak. We'll see. It'll be fun to watch on Sunday, 1 p.m. All right. Well, thank you for listening. It's Graham Talks Pats.